until that day. The dream of lasting peace, world citizenship, rule of international morality, will remaining but a fleeting illusion to be pursued but never attained. Now everywhere is war.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Graham Fuller, who is the former vice chairman of the National Intelligence Council at the CIA. He also served as the CIA's Kabul station chief and is currently a professor of history at Simon Fraser University. Graham Fuller has lived and worked in the Muslim world for nearly two decades and is the author of numerous books about the Middle East, including The Future of Political Islam and most recently A World Without Islam. His latest article at Global Viewpoint is Has Obama Inadvertently Broken the Mold in U.S. Foreign Policy? Welcome to Background Briefing, Graham Fuller.
Thank you, Ian.
So do you think that John Kerry's off-the-cuff remark at the press conference in London and the sudden switch in from bombing Syria to talking to both Syria, Iran, and the Russians, do you think, as you say, we've strayed into the political reforging of American foreign policy?
I think we may have strayed into it. It's going to take some time before we can see what comes of all of this. But I find it difficult to believe that this was all carefully arranged by Obama and the Russians and the Iranians and others to suddenly change the game plan, back away from what seemed like an imminent bombing of Syria, and to join up with the Russians on removal of chemical weapons from Syria. I'm pleased. I'm delighted with it. I think it's a step in the right direction, but it's too soon to know whether this is a very conscious plan or just, as I say, something they stumbled into.
But in your article at Global Viewpoint, Has Obama Inadvertently Broken the Mold in U.S. Foreign Policy? You talk about the unraveling of American exceptionalism, American unilateralism, America as the world policeman, and the architect of world order as Obama backs away from the brink of a new war with Syria and opens up a dialogue with Iran. It seems to me that what could be going on here, I think, is an even bigger fissure, and that is that you have this peculiar alliance between Saudi Arabia and Israel, in the sense that they're both against Iran and both backing the coup in Egypt, for example, against democracy. And you've got the possibility that we could maybe make a deal with the other side in this schism between Shiism and Sunniism. And in many ways, it would seem to me that if you look at the ledger on who's been screwing us over the last few decades, you can't help feeling that our friends the Saudis, who after all are the ones that allowed all the, heart-eating jihadis into Syria, which has played right into Assad's hands, have been, shall we say, duplicitous all along. And maybe is that at the end of the day where this thing could end up?
Well, that's interesting comments, Ian. I don't know whether I would call the Saudis duplicitous in this, because I think it's maybe perhaps a little more direct. But first of all, I think it's worth unpacking this whole problem here. The war, the struggle in the Middle East right now is currently, we see it between Saudi Arabia and Iran, is usually cast in terms of Shiites versus Sunni eternal struggle. I really don't think that's what this is truly all about. Essentially, Saudi Arabia is, and its fellow monarchs in the area, I think they're terrified at the prospect of expanding popular uprisings, popular revolutions, indeed overthrow of monarchies and the establishment of republics. So it's not that Iran so much is Shiite. I think Iran, from very early on since its revolution, has been very outspoken in calling for an end to monarchy. It said that monarchy is not Islamic, and that is correct. It is not the ideal form of government in Islam. And Iran represented kind of a new revolutionary force when that revolution took place in 1979. So the Saudis have always been very nervous about it, and especially since the Arab publics have often admired Iran for their guts and being able to willingness to stand up against U.S. power and be heard, as opposed to cringing like most of their own leaders do in the area. So I think in the end Saudis are hoping to close down any kind of change, radical moves, uprisings, or whatever else. Certainly they're entitled to do that, and God knows change is going to be messy, but at this point they represent the forces of counter-revolution in the Middle East.
And do you think that if there is, in other words, can you make the calculus that maybe we back the wrong side in the Sunni-Shia split, that at the end of the day, perhaps you can deal with the Iranians, and obviously their own people are pushing the envelope as they did under in the Green Revolution and continue to do, whereas the other more reactionary side, particularly Wahhabism, which is radicalizing Islam in Pakistan, in Nigeria, and all around the world, arguably, is basically really, in effect, what this so-called war on terror is about.
Yes, it is, but it's interesting to think back to the days of the Iranian Revolution, when many of the Shiites in the Gulf, many of whom had a raw deal as minorities in the Gulf, were then themselves more revolutionary, and Iran was spouting the death to America and this whole revolutionary vision. At that point, Washington was thinking, oh my God, Shiite bad, Sunni good. And now things have sort of seemed to have changed a little bit, especially with bin Laden 10 years ago with 9/11, when the pendulum began to swing the other way and people were saying, oh my God, Sunni bad, Shiite good. In the end, I don't think we want to change sides on this. We don't have a dog in this fight. As I said earlier, I don't really think this is all about Sunni versus Shiite so much as it is about change and trying to cling on to the status quo. After all, I mean, the Iranians have supported, for example, the Muslim Brotherhood movement in Palestine. It's called Hamas. And they've never had any trouble with this. The Iranians have always had fairly decent approach, taken some ideas from the Muslim Brotherhood, which is a very Sunni organization. But this hasn't been this sort of big split. So I don't think it's good for the Middle East or good for us or good for anybody else in the region if the United States kind of weighs in for the moment on one side or the other. The issue is really about change.
Again, I'm speaking with Graham Fuller, who's the former vice chairman of the National Intelligence Council. He served as the CIA's Kabul station chief and is currently professor of history at Simon Fraser University. He has lived and worked in the Muslim world for nearly two decades and is the author of numerous books about the Middle East, including The Future of Political Islam and most recently A World Without Islam. His latest article at Global Viewpoint is Has Obama Inadvertently Broken the Mold in U.S. Foreign Policy? So it's clear that the American people are ahead of the interventionists, whether they're liberal interventionists or neoconservative interventionists, and it may have a lot to do with the war weariness. In many ways, maybe we are a spent force. You've argued before when I've spoken to you over the years, Graham Fuller, and I think we were among the first people to talk about the Iraq war before it began, when everybody was beating the drum and all excited about it, that it'd be a quick victory followed by a slow defeat. And it's clear that we are in many ways a spent force, and that the problem, as you have pointed out in the past, is our footprint in that part of the world. So if we remove our footprint, what do you think will be our role?
Well, as I mentioned in this article about whether Obama has inadvertently broken the mold of American foreign policy, which, by the way, was also in Christian Science Monitor and Huffington Post and other places if people want to look for it, I argue that the problem actually for the United States has been endless interventionism in the Muslim world for a very long time. I think a lot of Americans tend to think that history began with 9/11. In other words, that here we were just minding our business trying to run the world, keep it on an even keel, when suddenly we were attacked out of left field by crazies. We indeed were attacked out of left field, and it was an outrage and a crime, but history didn't begin then. They felt that they were reacting to longtime American policies that they had objected to, including the stationing of American troops all over the Middle East and what the Pentagon calls our footprint. So I think there, the problem really in from the point of view of American policy is how much longer are we going to be involved in military intervention? If I really thought that going into Iraq, going to into Afghanistan, going into, in this case, say, Syria or Iran, would really change the situation for the better and could bring about an excellent solution, I might consider that. But how dumb do we have to be before we watch two or three of these interventions, which have been not only total military failures, we're about to get out with our tail between our legs and declare a victory in Afghanistan, but it's nothing of the kind. The situation invariably is worse and more radicalized and more people hating the United States and U.S. policies than ever before. So, you know, Al-Qaeda keeps reinventing itself and reinventing itself as more locals in these areas get killed, their families get killed, and they're willing to sign up with some, Al-Qaeda 2.0 or whatever it happens to be in the Middle East.
Well, and as you point out in your article, Graham Fuller, has Obama inadvertently broken the mold in U.S. foreign policy while we have been mired in the Middle East, essentially making enemies? The U.S. Has ignored the 5.54 million dead in the Congo. And so there's no question that our intervention is selective. Do you think that, for example, there's been some fairly serious uprisings in Sudan, and of course the leader there is been indicted by the International Criminal Court. His own people are rising up against him, not just the southern Sudanese and the people in Darfur. And the Security Council tried to take it up, and Russia vetoed them. So on the one hand, we're working with Russia on extricating or not getting deeper into Syria. But Russia's not necessarily playing a helpful role. And I take it the Chinese aren't, because they don't want intervention. They don't want anybody talking about what the Russians are doing to the Tibetans and what the Chinese are doing to the Tibetans and what the Russians are doing to the Chechens. So are we better off not having a moral position at all, or should we have a moral position that's clear and consistent?
Well, it's very difficult for big powers to be clear and consistent on things because no two situations are the same. And yes, it's nice to be consistent, and I urge greater consistency on all kinds of issues where we're wildly inconsistent. You just pointed up one that I'd mentioned in the article. We talk about over 100,000 people dead in Syria, and that's tragic and terrible, and hopefully will come to an end. But we hear all about that, and we don't hear anything about the 5.4 million dead in Sudan, in Congo, over the last decade. So, yeah, selectivity, we are going to be selective, but I think it's very hard to be highly indignant and standing on posturing in a moral position when we're very selective. We like democracy when it will overthrow our enemies. I've often said that, democracy is a weapon against our enemies, but it's never a gift to our friends. We champion democracy when it works in our favor, but if the Palestinians vote for the wrong people, then we reject the whole thing. If Islamists win in Egypt, then we're very unhappy because the wrong people won. So, you know, to me, the real bottom line here is getting American military footprints out of the area. That seems to me to be the single biggest cause of grief and anguish and anger among Muslims in the Arab world and beyond. I don't think the departure of America is going to solve everything, but I think it's a good start in the right direction, especially since none of these interventions have led to anything but greater grief and greater chaos in every single one of those countries that we've been intervening in. We can't solve all the world's problems. And once we enter into the game, then we become part of the equation, and people line up within Syria or Afghanistan or wherever else as to whether they're against the Americans or work with the Americans, and it ceases to be people working among themselves trying to work this out, and it becomes all about everything about America.
Well, Graham Fuller, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure, Ian. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Graham Fuller, who is the former vice chairman of the National Intelligence Council at the CIA. He also served as the CIA's Kabul station chief and is currently a professor of history at Simon Fraser University. Graham Fuller has lived and worked in the Muslim world for nearly two decades and is the author of numerous books about the Middle East, including The Future of Political Islam and most recently, A World Without Islam. His latest article at Global Viewpoint and the Huffington Post is Has Obama Inadvertently Broken the Mold in U.S. Foreign Policy? We're going to take a brief station break and be joined in the studio by Steve Groven, the host of Stand Up for Main Street, a political comedy benefit for Public Citizen, and comedian Mark Maron.